Technology pervades our lives, and it's the future. So women need to engage confidently with it. And here I speak to Dr. Anne-Maria Maffedon about how we can do that. Hi, I'm Penny DeVolk. Welcome to Grit in the Oyster, a podcast offering insights for women leaders. Why grit in the oyster? Well, because an oyster makes pearls from a foreign object or irritation. And that's often how we can feel as women leaders in organizations today. The trick is not to get spat out, but to grow into that natural gem. Through conversations with leaders and experts in the field of women in leadership, I hope to offer insight and inspiration, as well as practical advice, helping you navigate those grit in the oyster moments or times in your career. It's an opportunity to reflect, to step out of the fray, to tune out some of the noise, and tune into being the best leader you can be. Hello, I'm so pleased to introduce you today to computer scientist Dr. Anne-Maria Maffedon, an amazing advocate for women in STEM who calls time on women being cut out of the tech story, and is author of She's in Control, about women in tech. Anne-Maria shows we have more agency than we think, drawing on her own experience and the stories of other pioneers and innovators who have, against the odds, transformed technology. Anne-Maria is a keynote speaker, leader, creator of the award-winning social enterprise STEMETS. STEMETS engages, inspires, and connects the next generation of women and non-binary people into the science, technology, engineering, and maths field. She's a recognized and respected thought leader in the tech space. In 2017, she was awarded an MBE for services to young women and STEM. In 2020, she was voted the most influential woman in tech in the UK by Computer Weekly. A very warm welcome, Anne-Maria.
Thank you very much, Penny. Very excited to be here.
It's a real pleasure. I'm wondering if we could just start with you telling us your story.
I mean, how long do we have? I've been alive for a while. The short version, I grew up in East London. I'm a very proud East Londoner, coming to you actually as we record from East London, and have always had a curiosity for how things work, which most folks actually are born with that sense of curiosity. But for me, I maybe took it a little bit further than most. And so ended up having this wunderkind, child prodigy type childhood of exploring maths, exploring technology and computer science, and so have ended up, you know, I think I'm quite lucky actually in some ways that I was doing that at a time when, you know, things like the web were coming up. You know, the advancement of technology has been as immense as many of us could even have imagined, right, over the last 30 or so years. And so have ended up, I call myself a technologist more than anything else, but have ended up working on all manner of impactful things to ensure that where technology is becoming more and more important and is ruling more and more of our lives, of the way that we work, of the way that we play, of the things that we enjoy, that actually we ensure that we are solving more problems than we are creating in our creation, in our use, in our understanding of technology, and even more so that half of society, being women, are not being left behind or being treated again like second-class citizens as a result of their relationship with technology.
Brilliant. Really interested in your book, She's in Control, which sort of urges women to engage with technology and focuses on what technical literacy can give women. Can we explore this kind of notion of women's agency through tech?
Let's explore it. I mean, the tagline, the subheading on the book is, you know, how women can take back tech.
Yeah.
And it's why it's control, right? CTRL, the keyboard control, but also the word control. This is us, you know, being in technical control. And so when we talk about agency is about being able to have an impact, not being at the mercy of other things. There are elements, there are levers that you can pull, there are things that you can do. There's knowledge that you have and the power, a sense of control that you have over certain things. And I think when we look at the way that the world is so much more technological now than it was decades ago, that so much more of what we do and how we work and how we live, how we play, like I've said, is being influenced at the very minimum by this technology. I think there's some sort of agency that you gain back if you have an understanding of this technology. And we talk about tech literacy quite a lot, you know, in the field of work that I do. But, you know, when you think about, I don't know, someone in Italy, right? You turn up in Italy and you don't understand Italian. You're at the mercy of whoever you're there with for where you go to get gelato, the flavour of gelato you're going to have. And there's something of just having a little bit of understanding of Italian. You don't have to understand and know every single word in Italian in order to know maybe a gelato flavour, maybe where you are in Italy, perhaps know what's going on around you and the intentions of the people that you're with. And so it's that idea of having a little bit of tech literacy means that when there are algorithms that are brought in at work, when there's tech systems that you have to use to access services, when you know there's education and learning that you might want to do, understanding a little bit more about the technology allows you to do that, allows you to do that to your own end, to solve your own problems, to solve problems of people that you know and that you love, people that you don't know, but even sometimes just to understand the nature of those problems. And it's something we see quite a lot with, I don't know, social media as an example.
Yeah.
You know, you might log on and use the platform, but if you have an understanding, even just a small understanding about how that platform comes together, about how it was made, about the intentions maybe of the folks who made it, or even just the way that that platform and that coding or that app or whatever works, then you've got a little bit more agency to say, I don't want to be at the mercy of this. This is not going to make me feel a certain way about my life. It's not something that's going to become a time drain because I have a literacy, I have an understanding that I'm now going to enact in that agency to get in the way of them doing what it is that they want to do. So there's a lot of power. There's a lot of agency, and there's an element of control that we're able to build back by leaning into that tech literacy and taking tech back. And it's very important that there's that notion of back rather than stepping into this for the very first time ever as women.
Let's explore that taking it back. You know, what has happened? You highlight a few of the disadvantages for women in tech. What have you noticed that, you know, why we're stepping back? What happened to stepping out?
So then this is something that has definitely frustrated me on my own technical journey, in my own life. You know, we went back to the very beginning there at the top. But you know, if I look back, I remember growing up in the 1960s. You know, I wasn't there. I'm sure possibly all of your listeners weren't in the 1960s. But you know, you look back and it's like, you know, miniskirts and Twiggy is the story that we're told of the 1960s. And I remember the very first time I learned of a fantastic pioneer called Dame Stephanie Shirley, Steve Shirley, who I talk about in the book, who I've had the pleasure of meeting on occasions as well, who in the 1960s, having been a refugee, having been a child that came over as part of the Kinder Transport in the Second World War, she was a mathematician, I believe, at the post office, who when she got married, fell pregnant, you know, then it was like, stop working, you've got a child, so you don't do that anymore. And she was very frustrated at this. She was like, no, I still know the maths. I still enjoy what I was doing. And so she built a company of women at their kitchen tables across the country in a similar predicament. In the 1960s, we thought we were doing something magical in the early 20s working from home. No, she was doing this in the 1960s. They were writing things like the flight receiver for Concorde, new stock control systems. They were calculating bus timetables. In the 1960s, when she couldn't have even opened the business bank account without the permission of her husband or her father. And so now in the 2020s, we're like, oh, I don't get that tech, or you know, that's not for women. It's like, well, you know, she did so well that, you know, she ran it as a partnership. And so a lot of women were made incredibly wealthy when she eventually sold that company. That's the size and the scale of the technological work that they were doing. I mean, we still wear miniskirts today and hark back to the 1960s. Why are we not coding, leaning into the tech, running the systems that society works on and harking back in that way? Why is it just Twiggy, right? And that and the white light line on your water line. And so I think there is something about the herstory, the technical herstory that we have as our heritage that we can step into and that has been hidden and has been obscured very intentionally, that has meant that then we end up thinking that this is something that's not for us or something that, you know, is not for us to take, or we leave that to the guys, we leave that to the dudes. I didn't enjoy maths at school, and so this isn't for me. And it's like, okay, you also may not have loved your music teacher, and I've never heard anyone say they're not going to listen to music now as a result of their relationship with the music teacher. Why do we allow ourselves to be, you know, held back? And it's because of this storytelling. It's because of our sense of who we are, the role that we occupy in society, but also the relationship we have with technology. And so it's frustrating for me because we have so many stories, the power of stories to influence, to inspire. And so there's so many countless stories. I call them the technical herstory. I call them the technical historical chorus of women that we're joining.
Yeah.
That actually we should be able to lean into that. We should be proud of it and we should stand on it.
And it, as you say, it needs to be more visible. You know, I had Steve on my podcast a couple of years ago and just fantastic, just what she was doing. And as you say, the invisibility of that. Why do you think those stories of women who were great at maths, who were doing coding, who were basically steeped in technology, why have they been obscured?
For many reasons. I think that the biggest one is that of power. And this is something I explore quite a lot in the book. And again, when you're using the word control, control is about power.
Yeah.
And you know, you're able to maintain power. You're able to maintain a status quo if you control a certain, you know, set of folks, right? You maintain your power by holding, some people maintain their power by holding others down. And so we've had a very overt, very intentional hiding, right? We had the film Hidden Figures a couple of years ago, but obscuring of that herstory where we have, folks have actively said, okay, cool, no, let's not talk about those stories. Let's not talk about what those women have done. Let's destroy all evidence of the fact that they might have built this Waterloo Bridge in London, right? Let's leave Marie-Sophie Germain's name off the Eiffel Tower as we're celebrating 72 scientists and engineers of the 1700s in France. Let's, you know, now we know that there are women, and we already knew that maths exploded ovaries of women, right? So let's, you know, it's bad enough that we had one that slipped through. Let's not have many more, right? Let's obscure. Let's make sure that no one knows that she exists. And we have this time and time and time and time and time again. We have it in the way that we even tell stories today. I had this kind of statistics and explore this a little bit in the book, but even the idea of calling on women as experts, right? No, we call on the women as victims. We won't call on the men as experts. Even when they're there, even when they're, you know, taking up a lot of space in particular rooms, in particular spaces, even when that's a perspective that is needed in something as basic as, I don't know, period tech or menopause tech, right? There's all these examples we have of folks completely ignoring and forgetting that women exist and leaving them out and doing that and reinforcing again and again and again. And so I think it is about power. It's been a very, very intentional move by many powers that be, by the patriarchy itself, which we also have and feature in the book. But you know, it's something about, you know, this is tech is a tool. Tech is a tool. It's a tool that's used to maintain power. It's a tool that's used to gain power. And so if we can keep folks away from it, then we can reduce their power. We can maintain that tech as a tool for ourselves to use. And why would we, right? I talk about this notion of gatekeepers. Why would we allow just anybody to have that? No, we've got to gatekeep and keep it to a certain set of folks who we can trust to maintain that status quo.
So expand a bit more on the tech gatekeepers. And us becoming, as you say, really aware, and ourselves being really intentional about stepping in and the sort of social narrative that we may well have been raised with not being that accurate.
Yeah, sure. So gatekeeping we have, and gatekeeping is a part of maintaining that power, right? And it's something we have so entrenched and so burnt into the technology industry and the way that it's come about and where it's been built. It's come from an incredibly elitist space, you know, within academia. There's a lot of research, a lot of folks that are doing this. Academia, you know, has all of its problems that you may have, even more so across the technical field. And so we have a lot of folks who prey and who take advantage of that lack of understanding, lack of awareness, lack of knowledge of partly the herstory, but also what it is to be technical. And so we have gatekeeping. We have a lot of folks, you know, you used to be, you don't game. Yeah. And so, you know, when I play with my cartridges on the weekend and I know how this fits in my Nintendo 64, you're not doing that. And so are you going to be able to have that transferable skill to come and do it in work, right?
Yep.
It might have been, oh, you didn't drop out of this particular course at this particular university. And so actually you don't have what it takes to do this. It might be, oh, you don't know what Python is? Ha 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 ha, you know?
Yep.
And so there's this notion of there is a very narrow set of things that have been valued intentionally. But we're going to pre-select, we're going to say, okay, we know a lot of folks were driven to gaming. And so that's going to be something that we arbitrarily tie together,
yeah,
right, with technical prowess we tie together with gaming, or we tie it together with mathematics, for example. If you know maths, you can do anything. You can do everything. I've had this, the number of scenarios I've ended up in where it's like, what am I even doing here?
Because I'm good at maths.
I mean, because I'm good at maths, what's my note? Everything. And there are some folks who genuinely dine in and live on that, right? A lot of mathematicians I know who believe they do know everything. It's like, no, life is more complicated than maths, folks.
Yeah.
Right? Spoiler alert. And so there's a lot of folks that have lent into that. And so play and prey on the ignorance of other folks who might not, who may not have played those games, who still have incredibly logical minds, who still have perspectives that are needed and that should be valued as part of the technical process. And so you're able to do that and reinforce it. And it starts so young and so early that you then begin to feel and think that that's the truth. Whereas really, it's just gatekeeping that has come again and again and again and again in all manner of guises, from parents, from teachers, from education systems, from folks that are doing recruitment, from folks that are doing promotion, from folks who are working on policies. You know, and we have a lot of gatekeeping where it's like, oh, if you don't know this. And it's so interesting for me, as someone that does know a lot of this technical stuff, there are a lot of things we don't know. In the book, I talk about this big repository that we have of code, that a lot of folks go to this code. A lot of folks, we know, when they're at the so-called professionals, I mean, they are professionals, but the professionals, when they're struggling, turn to this particular tool and find all the answers there. And it's like, well, they'll never tell you that actually they don't have it all locked up here. Right. They'll pretend and then they'll go back. And so there's so much gatekeeping that goes on. And so being
and that just reinforces the whole notion that this special elite little group are actually the people who have got it down,
who were born to do it, and you know they
and don't even think about aspiring to be one of those because you don't have it.
You weren't born with it, exactly. And that's all nonsense because we also weren't, but I can tell you this as a mathematician myself, I wasn't born with the knowledge. I went and learned and understood and spent time learning it.
Yeah. Really interesting. So you've talked as well in the book, Emery, about you know, probably where women are disadvantaged, but you also imply that there are some advantages being a woman. You talk about, for example, problem solving, and sort of trying to change the channel for women to go, actually, I've got some really unique and distinctive skills that I can bring to this. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those ones, if I go back to period tech, so the example I always like to give is every couple of years, the tech industry discovers the period for the very first time.
Such a new thing.
Can you imagine, right? And it's a great fanfare. There's so much work, so much budget, so much marketing that goes into it. 4 years ago, one particular company discovered the period for the very first time, and it only allowed you to track 10 days of the period, 10 days of bleeding within it. And it was such an interesting one to kind of reflect on, that was it that there wasn't a single person who'd ever met anyone that had ever had a period?
Yes.
In that team.
Did you talk to anyone?
Or was it that they didn't value the insights and those folks brought? And if they're not getting that when we're literally talking about period technology, what else might we be talking about that has been untapped? Yeah. And I think of the example of menopause, and we've seen this recently. You know, there are women leaders I've spoken to who would tell me, you know, on their way up, you know, I always ignored it. People spoke about perimenopause, so I thought it wasn't a problem for me. I completely, you know, blanked it out, you know, ran away from it. And now that they're going through it, they're like, my goodness, you know, this is a huge thing. This happens to so many folks. It happens to almost you know, half of the population eventually if they get to that point. But also the number of things that you're dealing with when you turn up as a woman on the menopause, who's often senior. So you're not just dealing with low, you're dealing with fairly high level issues.
People who have quite a ripple effect.
Exactly. Yep. And you're dealing with that and you are succeeding. And you are delivering, and you are still doing that, no, given everything that's going on internally. That there's definitely something in there that we want to bottle, we want to understand, could be transferable, and could be a learning for other folks. And I think it's not just about bodily functions, it's about perspective, it's about experiences, it's about where women end up being socialized to be and the problems that they see, the perspectives that they have that have been completely ignored in that technological advancement, in those assumptions, in those decisions, in the products that we have, that actually it's quite a low level of input and value that you can bring, where folks are completely, you know, another one is bras. I have this in the book, and it, you know, I don't get to talk about bras often enough on technological stages.
We need to talk about bras.
We have to talk alongside menopause, pregnancy, all of it. But, you know, I have a friend who's a developer who is working in this company, and they are selling clothes. And she's having to explain and then fight with her fellow teammates on the fact that to sell bras, you have a number and then a letter.
Yeah.
Like that. Like that's something she's, and it's not unique to her, but you can imagine in that scenario, any of us could add value there and could save them. And to this day, that website still sells bras on small, medium and large. Because they just couldn't listen and did it. And that's a really small thing. As women, there's so much more. There's such a rich set of experiences that we have
perspectives. That we're not tapping into, yeah.
At all. And this is low level, let alone the high level. And so I think this is it. You have to remember, whether it's a legal background, whether it's a management background, whether it's a financial background, whatever it might be, there is a quality in that that is missing in those that are building the technology. And so step into those rooms with the knowledge you have. Don't be made to feel like you're less because you don't know what Python is. No, you don't need to know what Python is. That's not the, that doesn't have to be the core of the value. You can go and learn Python, and then you can bring that if you really want. But actually there's a lot that you have intrinsically core to you that you might think is normal and is basic that actually goes missing again and again and again and again and again.
Yeah, if we're not in the room. And you talk about, you know, encouraging women to curate their own tech rooms or tribes. Mm-hmm. How might they do that?
Oh, lots of different ways. I mean, I go through this quite a lot in the book in terms of, you know, finding tech rooms, building tech rooms, exploring them. I think we're really, really fortunate in that we're in this era now where so many folks are waking up to the fact that this is a problem and that women are missing, that a lot of those tech rooms, and women are self-organizing, people are self-organizing, organizations are providing them. And so you probably have a tech room at work, right? Folks that are doing a consultation or exploring the use of, I don't know, ChatGPT at this point, that actually to be in that room and say, okay, cool. Like, how does it work? How might this impact me? How might this be something that I want to, I can see a gap, a glaring omission there, right? And being in those rooms and bringing the glaring omissions that you can see to those technical audiences or those technical conversations is important. I think the other thing is, as women, we self-organize anyway. I mean, it's just part of what we do and how we are. Yeah. And so why not do that around a technology? Why not do that around the latest in food tech or knitting tech or language tech or whatever it is that you might be interested in? You know, how do you lean on the interests and the information you already have and you already know and the things you know very well to say, okay, cool, what, how does this interact with? How might this be impacted? Where does virtual reality come together with eating? You know, and there's all these small little bits that the possibilities are literally endless. And so actually don't be overwhelmed with, I have to be in that room and I have to know all of these things. It's like, no, start with what you know.
Yeah.
And know that you just exploring this, the, even however seemingly small it might be, you just exploring the settings in your microwave, the settings in your TV and the settings in your phone. You're starting somewhere, and that might be something you might compare with your friends, with your mates. Yeah. Right? There might be something you then discover that actually, if you really want, Google can tell you where you park the car, and all of you then discover that there's other different bits and pieces that you can use, or that you might say, actually, I could do that better.
Yep. Yep. And just be curious about it as opposed to afraid of it.
It's all about curiosity, and it's not about having the fear. It's about leaning into the curiosity, but it's also about knowing that this is going to continuously change. And so you're not going to know it, so you know all of the Italian, like I said, because it will continue to evolve. But if you know a little bit now and you know a little bit more next week and a little bit more next month, you're heading in the right direction. Yeah. And direction of travel, and at least some travel, is what's important on all of this.
And keeping that on your radar is something that you need to pay attention to. You also in the book recommend exploring kind of new habits. I like that notion of new habits, like tutorials, creating a project to get started. What are good tech habits?
I think there's lots of good tech habits. I think all of them center around continuously learning, always wanting to know what's next, what happens, what more is there, what more can I see, but also around continually reflecting, and this is just as important actually as the learning, but reflecting on the impact of what it is that you're learning and you're seeing, reflecting on the bits that are missing. And again, you know, this isn't just a thing for women, but you know, that's, that goes missing a lot in the tech industry. Folks ask you, okay, cool, we can do that, but what, why? Just because we can doesn't mean we should. Yeah. Why is this something? What would be the impact on people like me? What would be the impact on people who aren't like me? Will be on the, you know, and asking, continually asking questions.
Yeah.
It's fun to play with the whiz bang.
Yep.
Right? it's fun, you know, to see it fail sometimes and to, you know, have the big bangs or to see yourself represented in the technical. But okay, cool, let's reflect. What impact does this have? What does this relate to? Who might this change things for? Why might this be needed? And why might this not be needed? Why might this be harmful? And I think good tech habits surround that idea of you're continuously learning, but also challenging, also asking questions, yeah. Bringing that perspective and remembering that, you know, technology is not an island. It doesn't exist in a vacuum.
Yeah.
There's always
going to
be
having an
impact.
And we need to be thinking about that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And paying attention to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Emery, tell us more about STEMETS.
Oh, so STEMETS is a nonprofit. We work with girls and young women and young non-binary folk aged 5 up to 25 to engage, inform and connect them with the STEM fields and the STEAM fields. And this is science, technology, engineering, arts and design and maths. And for us, this is all around actually showing the broad diversity of options across the field, whether that's in academia, whether that's industry, whether that's in entrepreneurship, but also allowing young people to see themselves in these spaces, right? And as we've already been saying, it can be quite frightening. It can be, you know, fear of the unknown. It can be something actually going in. You might think from the outside when you're riding by on the bus or you see it in the movie that it's not a great place or it doesn't have windows. It's windows and it's toilets. It's always the yep. one that the girls are blown away by. But actually getting to see that, feel comfortable in those spaces, be welcomed into those spaces and doing that in formative years, so that then it's part of what they see the world yeah. to be, what they see themselves to be.
It's normalized.
And so, exactly. And so everything we do is free. It's always fun. There's always food because we'd like to eat. And often with a lot of people, if you advertise for free food, they'll come along anyway. And we were 10. We're 10 in 2023.
Fantastic.
And about 60,000, minimum 60,000 young people that we work with across those 10 years across the UK, Ireland and beyond.
Wow. Now that's an impact. So, Emery, what is kind of your vision for the future, for tech in general, and maybe the place women have to play in that?
My vision and my hope is that we end up with a much more balanced tech industry, but also society has a slightly more balanced relationship with technology and the creation of technology. I give the kind of analogy almost of, you know, not everyone is an immigration lawyer. However, most people have an opinion on immigration, for better or for worse. However,
yep.
right, that barrier of, you know, I don't know what it would the school subject equivalent would be of immigration, maybe geography, right? This thing of, you know, you don't have to know the ins and outs, but on balance, generically, you have some sense, some idea of what it is. You have some literacy in what it means for someone to move from one country to another. And you can see how that might relate to different parts of life.
Yeah.
And so I'd love for technology to get to that point where even if you're not a technologist, you're still able to engage. You know, many folks in an English-speaking country can speak English. And so you use that as a basis to then, you know, build on. And you don't have to be a writer or a poet. That's the kind of higher level. You don't have to be a journalist, right? That's the professionals. But you can also just have your own literacy of English to go back to that language example. And so my view, my aim, my vision is that we get to a point where we have that with technology so that then we can question, we can challenge, we can have the right checks and balances in and around technology to ensure, like I've said, that we are solving more problems than we create with technology. Because at the moment, doing it in a dark room, doing it away from everybody else, mm-hmm. with just a couple of folks who pass an arbitrary bar,
yeah,
is meaning that we are building tech that is harming people. It's forgetting that folks exist.
Yeah.
That is putting people in danger, that is making decisions again and again, billions of times a second now, rather than in the analog when it was happening, you know, one person was sat there stamping in that office.
Yep.
You know, that we've multiplied up a lot of those problems and a lot of those issues where it doesn't have to be that way. We can build technology the same way that we built blockchain to be, you know, not something that you can edit easily in a yeah. brilliant ledger. We can build technology that actually has those checks and balances and that thought process built in so that we can solve more problems. And so that's my vision, is that we don't end up in this Black Mirror-esque Terminator 2 type scenario.
Yep.
Because people didn't ask the right questions at the right time.
So finally, what advice would you have for women then to engage in this hope, this future that you have?
My advice is get talking. Get curious. Don't feel like you have to know all of it. Don't feel like you are having to go back to your maths lessons to engage with this. have a look at how does this overlap with the things you are interested in, the things that you do love, the things that you are good at. Start there and build from there. Start from, and this is why in the book, it's incredibly generic. I'm not telling anyone to learn to code or getting anyone to be a project manager or to go into cyber. That's not the point. This is, what do you already have and where does technology intersect with that? And start from there and talk about it with other people. You will know people that have the same interests, that have the same problems, right? Are in the same situation as you. Have a chat with them, have a talk with them, and that's where you start to build. And you'd be surprised. You'd surprise yourselves at the basic digital skills you probably already have that you didn't realize. You'd surprise yourselves at the things that you suggest that you think are sensible and basic that no one has thought of or tried or considered. And you'd surprise yourself at how far you'd be able to go with that technology knowledge, the different spaces and tech rooms that you end up in, and the influence that you could have just from little old you asking little old questions.
Yeah. And being so at the table. Yeah. It's great advice. And what about advice for the people who are listening who may be thinking, maybe I'm a gatekeeper?
So my advice for folks who just now realizing they're a gatekeeper as well. Well done. Congratulations. Welcome. I mean, everybody gatekeeps in some way. They just maybe don't realize where they're doing it to, why they're doing it to, or all the rest of it. It'd be welcome. And then the second thing would be, think of your legacy. This is what I always go back to when I talk to tech folks. The nature, you know, the QR code, I know I'm dating this a little bit, but the QR code has just turned 50. April 2023, the QR code's just turned 50. The initial folks that were working on it, or it was a twinkle in someone's eye, and they're no longer sat in the same space and occupying the same rooms or roles that they were 50 years ago. And for so many things that we do as technologists, that we do in power structures,
This
isn't about now, this isn't about tomorrow, this is not about next year, this is about 20, 30, 40, 50 years into the future. The gatekeeping that you're doing now is going to have that impact. And do you want to be proud of the legacy that you're leaving? Do you want to reinforce? If you want to reinforce and continue, brilliant, thanks. Continue gatekeeping. You're doing a good job. But most folks realize that there are a lot of problems. Most folks realize that when they have the agency to make change, they want to do good, leave things better than they found them. Mm. And so lean into that. Every time you see yourself gatekeeping, who can you pull up? Who should you be incorporating? What different types of value can you be looking for, seeking, valuing in your space? And ensure that you are supportive. Ensure that you are bringing folks in, and that you're not gatekeeping. You don't continue to gatekeep, because it's a really short-sighted, short-term view, and this is bigger than you.
Yep, and challenging people to ask themselves, what is my legacy here?
And I do, and also the privileges that they do have, because I think a lot of folks don't realize. It's a great question, Penny. I think a lot of folks don't realize that they're gatekeeping.
Yeah.
And I do have this. There's a getting started section in each chapter of the book. But have a look. I've got an exercise in there, taken from the Safe Zone project, around just even recognizing your own privileges.
Yeah.
Right? The idea of seeing yourself reflected, maybe in the boardroom around you. The idea of being able to be open to your family about, who you love. There's so many things that actually we don't realize are privileges. We don't realize that we're maintaining those existing structures. And so actually, have a look, have a think, talk to a couple of folks around you. What actions can you do in the now, in this week, in the next month, to counteract some of the gatekeeping that you've actively been doing up until this point?
Yeah, consciously or unconsciously. Yeah, mm-hmm. Brilliant. Emery, thank you so much. It's just been such a pleasure talking to you, and great wisdom. Love the book, and really wish you and Stemets all the very best. I think the difference of the legacy you will leave will be incredibly powerful. So thank you for exercising your agency in relation to such an important issue today. Thank you so much, Anne-Marie.
Thank you, Penny.
Thanks for listening to Grit and the Oyster. If you're enjoying our conversations, do subscribe, rate and review us on your podcast platform, and join me again soon. You can also find more information and resources on building your best leadership self on pennydevolk.com, including my blog that covers topics from how to negotiate powerfully as a woman and building your authority, through to having your voice heard and boosting confidence, all in support of building your leadership career.